good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Mr. Dave Allen, and we will bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, October 19th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody. I liked that introduction with the special prefix of Mr.
Oh, well, lends, I'll make sure it doesn't happen again.
Indeed. Lads, lends an air, if not unwanted or whatever, of respectability that I'm sure I don't deserve.
Oh, you certainly do. Oh, well, you'll just have to start calling me Mrs. Anyway, let's get to the gold prices here. And, you know, weird market today. It's been all over the page. Silver, we had a good day. It was up to $19.20, $20 higher than what it is right now in the New York spot price aftermarket. We're still above 19 at $19.01.40. Silver is up 4 pennies at $24.31. Platinum was down $9 at $858. Palladium was up $17 at $2,376. Let's see what the dollar is doing. Down 30.30 at 93.39. Crude oil is down 0.24 at 40.64. And the paper markets today, they were all over the page too. I think they were down, what, almost 400 or 500 points at one time. They have clawed back somewhat. Well, not much. The Dow is down 456 points, 28,149. The NASDAQ was down 1.65%, down 192 points at 11,478. The S&P was down 56 points, 3,426. 10-year yield, 0.76%. And you know, the only thing really that I saw in relationship to the market is, I don't know, I guess they are talking about a slip. Wall Street's main index has slipped on Monday as investors worried that they might not see a coronavirus economic stimulus deal before the presidential election. You know, it's amazing that is what everybody is betting on. White House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, we're going to talk about this too, but that was the big deal. That's what they're blaming the Wall Street drop for, maybe thinking that'll put some pressure on D.C. to make sure that the stimulus gets passed. But I did see where President Trump said he was willing to sign anything above $1.8 trillion. So I don't know what the Democrats are waiting for. You know, he's giving them the okay to do it. You had Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft. They were all down more than 1% and creating the biggest drag on the S&P 500. All 11 major S&P industry sectors were trading lower, with healthcare and communication services index leading the percentage declines, dipping more than 1%. The Dow Jones Transport Average reversed course after making gains earlier today, with airlines such as United Airlines advancing after the U.S. Transportation Security Administration said it screened more than 1 million airline passengers on Sunday for the first time since mid-March. So there you go. Netflix was up about 1%, and, you know, the stories go on and on. But you know, it's amazing that it doesn't have anything to do about maybe China said to be preparing to invade Taiwan, Dave. You think, maybe? Do you think that could be it?
We have Beijing. Some more signals and missiles pointing in that direction.
Yeah, we have the Beijing is stepping up the militarization of its southeast coast as it prepares for a possible invasion of Taiwan. The People's Liberation Army has been upgrading its missile bases and reportedly has deployed its most advanced hypersonic missile, the DF-17, to the area. The DF-17 has a maximum range of 1,550 miles made its first public appearance on last year's October 1st National Day Parade to mark the 70th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. And, of course, Beijing regards Taiwan as a breakaway province and has vowed to take back by force if necessary. So we've seen the relationships between Beijing and Taipei. They have deteriorated. And since, you know, 2016, when Tsai Ing-wen from the independence-leaning Democratic Progressive Party was elected as president, and they have refused to accept the One China principle. So the line in the sand, I think, has been drawn.
Yeah, and it's apparently getting deeper. I mean, the size of some of these missile bases and the Eastern and Southern Theater Commands of mainland China have doubled in recent years, and that's showing that the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, is stepping up preps for a war targeting its island neighbor to the south. Now, we know the PLA had deployed its Russian-built air defense system that could detect and shoot down missiles and drones and jets from up to 500 miles away, certainly to defend any attack by a well-equipped Taiwanese Air Force. And, another sign, their coastal defenses include 20 Air Force brigades, and that includes some of them armed with the country's first stealth warplane, like the B-1 or B-1B. They call it the J-20. Meanwhile, their Marine Corps, China's, has been earmarked to play a key role in any invasion, has 10 of its 13 brigades now based along the southeast coast. So that's got to be presenting a fairly alarming picture, literally, of a buildup as tensions continue to rise between those two countries, certainly the U.S. and others involved as well, Melody.
And you really don't even see much reporting on that anywhere. Even if you go to the one of my favorite websites, antiwar.com, you really don't see much about this.
Yeah, very little.
Very little
action on this. I suspect tomorrow, Wednesday, we'll start to see a little bit more about this particular thing, but we're trying to bring it to you early as we hear it to start off an otherwise already volatile week.
You know, we were talking, or I was talking about the stimulus, one of the reasons why the stock market was down. But I mean, it's, supposedly, the lines between Mnuchin and Pelosi are, they're still open communication about stimulus. There's a couple of number of dividing lines remain between the two sides, including the scale of assistance to state and local authorities. Tax credits Democrats want for lower-income families, liability protections that Republicans are pushing, and a repeal of a credit for past business tax losses that Republicans want to keep. So, President Trump said he's ready to match that $2.2 trillion spending level that was demanded by the Democrats, or even go higher. But McConnell said, I don't think so. We're going to oppose any package that big. We'd rather do it in two packages than just one. We'll go that high eventually, but let's just do a little at a time. But Trump said he's willing to go pretty far to get a deal done. And so it doesn't seem like the administration is concerned anymore with the amount or the Pelosi's time limit. So,
The
saga continues, Dave.
Yep, I'm sure they want something the campaign can point to as some additional support for struggling people and businesses here with November 3rd just around the corner. And at the same time, I'm sure that Mitch is trying to appease a couple of wings in his upper chamber. Not the least among them right now is his wing of refound deficit hawkishness. After November 3rd, possibly with irrespective of how the election actually turns out for Senate control of for control of the Senate, I suspect deficit hawkishness is going to see a dip downward, Melody, as more and more people say, hey, we got to do something, even if we're heading out of office back to our homeland.
Well, we'll see what happens with the election, whether they're heading out or not. They know this has to be done or it will collapse, but maybe they want it to collapse, so who knows. It's a day-to-day thing, and
they're
going to pass it. You get the Dow drop 500 points. Yeah. Three, 4 days in a row. Yeah. Here comes stimulus.
And that gets your attention pretty fast. Former House Speaker John Boehner thinks that if Biden wins the presidential election, that the House and Senate will hold off on a stimulus bill of any size until after the January 20th inauguration. And then he thinks you're likely to see a rather large stimulus pass the Congress and get signed into law. But, of course, that's jumping ahead into unknown land.
I'm no fan of John Boehner at all, but it kind of makes sense, because you're going to have him hold off just to... Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It depends. Who knows? Who knows at this point in time? Throw those darts or... What is it when you're looking to see if your spaghetti is cooked? You throw it against the wall and see what sticks.
Yep.
Yeah. So if it sticks, I forget if it sticks, it's done.
If it sticks, bet on it.
Yeah. Several officials at the Fed reportedly are beginning to worry about asset bubbles and excessive risk taking as a result of their extraordinary policy interventions this year. You'd think they would begin to worry about it as they do and introduce their extraordinary policy interventions, not after the fact, but hey. Some are now pushing for tougher financial regulations as there's concerns growing that monetary policy is encouraging behavior detrimental to economic recovery and creating pressure for additional bailouts. Like, they really think that they care. Neel Kashkari said, I don't know what the best policy solution is. And if he doesn't know what the best policy solution is, then what the heck is he doing being the Minneapolis Fed president? I say. He says, he knows we just can't keep doing what we've been doing. As soon as there's a risk that hits, everybody flees and the Federal Reserve has to step in and bail out the market. That's crazy, and we need to take a hard look at that. Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren called for a rethink of financial stability issues in the United States. And Fed Governor Lael Brainard said last month that expectations of extended low interest rates were boosting imbalances. Where did all these guys get their degrees? It's just like,
thinking places.
It really is amazing, and it just shows you they do know what they're doing. They know what's going to happen when they create these programs. They know they're only Band-Aids. They know they're only kicking the can down the road. With a fingers crossed, hoping that something might reverse. So they know exactly, and it's truly sad, because the only ones that are going to pay are the taxpayers out there. You guys are the ones that are going to pay. You're going to pay the price, the savers. people with pensions, retirement accounts. You're the one that's going to, you know, get the benefits of this runaway, and I'm saying that, of what the Fed is doing and what DC is doing with all this creation of programs, just like they did in 2008. But, Dave, as long as that stock market is up there, we're okay.
Does anything else matter? Well, you know, here's an interesting dynamic, I think. An article I read just before today's program sort of confirms that suspicion that as we get closer to the election with, you know, a real tight race at the top, you know, already reading that lobbyists are knocking on the door of the Biden campaign, you know, trying to get some initial influence. Lobbyists typically, in virtually every administration, serve as advisors to these presidential transition committees, teams that, you know, look to choose the cabinet members and the other deputy and undersecretaries that require confirmation by the Senate. You know, some of them already thinking, well, it's not too early to get a head start even before the final vote is taken, much less tallied, which, as we know now, could be days or even weeks after November 3rd. But I say that because more than one of these regional Fed presidents has already begun to be listed as, you know, potential cabinet members, either Secretary of the Treasury, White House Chief Economic Advisor, I mean, real senior positions. And a few of the names that Melody just mentioned are among those already being bandied about. It doesn't mean it's so or will be so, but what I suggest is that take virtually everything you read now by a senior Washington figure, whether they're a political appointee currently or potentially, take it with a grain of salt because they might just be trying to, you know, posture themselves for serious consideration, whether it's, you know, Mr. Trump or Mr. Biden, who's our next president.
Well, are we heading into break already? We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial
Survival.
It's not fair,
Melody.
I know it's not fair.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
It's a mad world. In France, the girls wear scanties, but on lamb chops, they put panties. I'm telling you, it's a mad world. A Japanese named Louie says the Chinese hate chop suey. Without a doubt, it's a mad world.
Whoever thought when that movie came out and that song that we would be playing it so many years later with the thinking about just how mad world we
how timely
are living
in and appropriate.
Right now. Oh, I know it. So who would have thought? And maybe many of those who, I mean, it is before my time, but many of those who were a little more politically in tune at that point in time, maybe they, you know, saw a lot of the issues that we're basically facing today, how it would evolve to here today. I mean, I know I have many clients who have been following the, you know, in depth the politics, you know, for 50 plus years. So, kind of interesting. Great, you know, I love it. So, thanks, Todd.
Way to go, Todd. Yeah.
Well, you know, Target said today, you know, Target, the store, said today that it was going to spend another $70 million on another round of employee bonuses. The retailer is going to pay $200 to its more than 350,000 employees who work at the stores, distribution centers, and contact centers by early November. Grocers and big box retailers, including Walmart, Amazon, Kroger, temporarily increased pay and gave bonuses to hourly workers during pandemic. Isn't that nice? Hero pay, they call it. And ladies and gentlemen, this is all image building to these companies, but be as it may, if people needed the money, go for it. The hero pay was meant to recognize workers who helped the company replenish shelves during weeks of stockpiling and put their own health at risk. I don't know, have you been to Walmart lately? And there's a lot of empty shelves still. It just amazes me. There's a lot of stores I know around this area with a lot of empty shelves. Retail workers across the country has gotten sick, and many of them, I don't know how many have died from COVID-19. Let's see. Lowe's gave an additional $100 million in bonuses to hourly employees this month, $300 to full-time workers, and $150 to part-time and seasonal hourly employees. So I wonder if they cut their hours. I wonder if they... how many have they laid off? So they needed these people to work more. So it's always nice to see what is truly behind a lot of these bonuses that they've given to them. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying so often there is something behind the scenes that is never really reported. So anyway, Dave.
Well, this is a second round. Target, for one, has given other bonuses during the pandemic. Gave bonuses ranging from $250 to $1,500 to about 20,000, what they call team leads, who oversaw store departments. That was all the way back in April. And it gave $200 bonuses to all full-time and part-time hourly employees in July. And of course, you know, gave the usual performance bonuses to store directors and their executive team, et cetera, et cetera. The company also temporarily, anyway, raised its wages by $2 an hour in March. Now, as it phased out those wage increases, it sped along plans to increase its company minimum wage to $15 an hour in July. Mm-hmm. So, not the six-figure bonuses that I'm sure a lot of their banking brothers and sisters are still seeing and will see again, but, you know, particularly during these times, every little bit helps, Melody.
It does. It does. And but usually, you know, I mean, again, then we're going to move on, talk about your newsletter article. It's just whatever, I mean, how long have I been doing these programs? And every time these companies, you think that they're doing great and wonderful and you're happy and so forth and whatnot, you just read a little bit a little bit further and, well, this store in that place closed down and, you know, they, you know, more people are usually hurt. They only talk about the good stuff that they do, and then in the background they're laying off people and everything else to justify for the increases. So I hope that's not the case.
Yeah,
but usually it is.
Well, Target especially. I mean, they're looking, I think, at a $1.7 billion in profits.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they could give the employees $100 then.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, the newsletter. Folks can sign up at dgscoins.com. You're writing about Christmas, Dave?
That's true.
In October?
Miracles to be Christmas miracles, to be precise, Melody. As the Christmas holiday season, I say, rapidly approaches, instead of pre-setting their home TV recorders for the annual classic miracle on 34th Street, the nation retailers this year are praying for an annual miracle on Main Street. You know, in fact, retailers that are on the brink of demise because of this year's recession are counting on what's probably the most uncertain holiday season ever for a last shot at survival. We're talking about survival not just for a particular store or a chain or two, but for an entire industry. On the one side are big boys like Amazon and Walmart, and as we just mentioned, Target, which are booming. For those on the other side, however, the normally all-important holiday shopping season is taking shape against the most dismal backdrop for the industry in years. The pandemic and the whipsaw that's been chopping up and spitting out generations-old names this year, like JCPenney, Neiman Marcus, Pier 1, just to name a few, has really exacerbated a long, slow retail decline that's been underway really since the Great Recession.
Wow. And adding to this season's anxiety, Dave, is a recent PwC survey that shows while 55% of shoppers plan to spend more or the same as last year, 40%, though, say they plan to spend less.
Well, that's absolutely true, but perhaps the single action most symbolizing this dire situation for Macy's and other retailers like them is Macy's decision for its 95th annual Thanksgiving Day Parade to be held virtually.
I know. Can you believe that?
A virtual parade.
I know.
Not on the crowded, joyful streets of Manhattan, but online and on TV in some weird fashion. Yeah, this holiday is struggling retailers' last effort to be relevant for the consumer and to prove their reason for existence. Mm-hmm. And those are the words of Sarah Wyeth. She's a retail analyst at the rating agency S&P Global. Rising corporate debt certainly could be one factor that does some of them in. And other struggling chains just may not be able to make the critical investments to stand out against their better capitalized competitors. Just not enough cash on hand. They may not even be able to buy up inventory or spruce up their e-commerce systems to offer things that have become even more popular since the pandemic hit, like home delivery or curbside pickup. But ironically, the companies that wiped out debts in bankruptcy court since filing toward the start of the pandemic could have more flexibility to spend in the months to come. Nevertheless, economist James Knightley of ING believes there will be some challenges for retailers as the employment picture seems to be softening. In short, Melody, the holiday season this year will be a key for what kind of momentum the U.S. sees. Just as the NYC ball drops in front of virtually no people and the calendar folds into 2021.
You know, I think it's kind of weird because I think we went through this year, and it doesn't, putting aside, you know, what you believe and so forth on the virus, we've come through this year. I mean, everything was shut down, but, you know, here we are today, and I think everything we were affected was in our little corner of the world that we saw, and we were affected. When it comes through the holidays and we've seen these, all of these events and so forth that we're used to seeing, I mean, what's going to happen to Black Friday? That's not going to exist, not like it has in the past. I mean, I never shopped on Black Friday anyway, but I mean, that's when your retailers did the most, that's when they went into, you know, that's when they became profitable, was Black Friday. These retailers wait for the Christmas holidays. And you know, you mentioned the Thanksgiving Day parade and watching the ball, and not just New York City's, but all the little towns across this country that had some sort of a New Year Eve ball drop, whether, you know, it's shoes or whatever. You know, Hershey, Pennsylvania was always the Hershey Kiss that dropped. It's not going to happen in the same manner. So it's, I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird.
Yes, it is.
But so again, I don't know. I think we're going to feel it more on a national basis. And you know what? Maybe that can bring some unity together in this country. So
I think it's a good time for a new season of Stranger Things.
Stranger Things, yes.
We're ready.
Perhaps.
Take us
Perhaps.
Away. Of course, anyone who, like me, just spent the last 2 months watching a new show called Lovecraft Country. Wow. In the realm of Stranger Things, J.J. Abrams directed and produced a series. Very interesting. very interesting series, ladies and gentlemen.
You'll have to tell me off the air.
Yes.
All right. The Fed's index of industrial production, that's what tracks the output of factories, mines, and utilities, fell a seasonally adjusted 0.6% last month. After we've seen consistent increases since May. Most notably, output remains 7% below where it was in February. So that kind of puts a little bit of a dose of reality on some recent news showing that the manufacturing indexes have surged over the past few months. Some analysts actually believe that the Purchasing Managers Indexes showed a V-shaped recovery, given that the index is a sentiment or at the highest level since 2018. But again, the hard numbers, you know, they do continue to lag. So, Dave, what say you?
Well, I agree. Again, we're talking again about the difference between sentiment, you know, be it, you know, consumers or purchasing managers, and the actual numbers. And I mean, it's almost like this division between the stock market and the overall economy. There's really a disconnect. And here again, we have such mixed signals going on that just, I mean, intensifies the uncertainty that's, you know, right before us anyway. And all that does is lead to more volatility. Hey, if you're looking for a haven from that, Melody Cederstrom at 1-800-375-4188. That's your best bet, ladies and gentlemen. But listen, back to this story. Manufacturing, which happens to be the biggest component of industrial production, fell 0.3% last month after rising a little over 1% in August. Utility production fell almost 6%, mainly due to a decline in air conditioning use. It's been a mild late summer and fall. Mining output rose a tad, and capacity utilization, which is a measure of slack in the industrial economy, fell to 71.5% in September. So, you know, the tea kettle spout shape of a quick bounce back and decline, which is seen in manufacturing industrial production, is eerily similar to the shape of other U.S. data points, most notably employment. They both show a rebound that has begun to level off, importantly, short of where things were at the start of the year, again, resulting in clear uncertainty pervading this pandemic economy.
Hmm. Yeah, it's there's so many things going on, and we talked about this, I think, the last program about these short sellers, how their betting stocks are going to fall. And, you know, these with the stock market, without today, you know, the short sellers are moving back into technology shares in the broad U.S. indexes with increasing confidence, betting that prices are going to fall. You know, the old saying, Dave, was you made more money with markets falling than you ever will make with the markets going up. And that's true. But you can also lose a lot more, too. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Someday somebody's gonna make you wanna turn around and say goodbye, say goodbye. Until then, baby, are you gonna let him hold you down and make you cry? Don't you know, yeah, things are changing, yeah, things are going your way. If you hold on for one more day, yeah, hold on.
Hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Going into the break, we were talking about short sellers. I don't know if you wanted to add any more to that, Dave.
Well, man, I'm assuming that most listeners understand that investors, short sellers, are investors who essentially rent stock to sell it on the open market, betting that it's going to fall and that they can purchase it at a lower price and pocket the difference. That's how they make a profit. But after largely cashing out bets at the end of the first quarter, following the market crash in late March, and then when it pulled back again in July and August, this recent rise in stock prices has bears upping their bets again. And stock market bulls, who believe prices are going to continue to rise, had already been celebrating the apparent disappearance of short sellers in the third quarter, which is normally a sign that stock prices are set to increase or to continue to increase. Except that's not exactly what happened. There may be less shares shorted in the market, but overall, the value of short exposure has remained relatively stable. Who knows? We were talking in between segments how there's so much short selling and other options trading going on in the equities today, and that's now that you see precious metals and ETFs. The big traders have taken to manipulating the precious metals markets this way, legally, by all this options trading, too. Not that it's, you know, a recent phenomenon. It's been going on in different ways for a year. It's just, I think, been made a lot easier with the advent of ETFs, precious metal ETFs. So, anyway, not a good thing. Who knows what this really signals, other than their mixed signals. And if you want to have a little more certainty, again, geez, turn your nose up at these very risky, you know, unless you really, really know what you're doing or work with somebody who you think does. Fill up your portfolio with more gold and silver, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a no-brainer. At this point in time, it's a no-brainer. You know, consumer confidence remains well below the level seen before the pandemic. The University of Michigan released its latest consumer sentiment index on Friday. showing a small improvement that was the result of some increasing optimism, but I think that's going to be short-lived. The current conditions index recorded the second small reversal, the first being in June, but even at its best, it has never come close to the December peak and still down by 26%. So, and that's how you, you know, you're going to hear about all the great gains and all the numbers increasing, but we got to look at where it's been since December, still down 26%, Dave.
Yep. Yep. I've really got nothing to add. There's another sentiment index that found similar results, similar attitudes, with confidence in the overall U.S. economy declining.
So, Conoco. It's been a long day.
There's a Sunoco card holder, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to say card holder.
Are you? Well, they agreed to buy Concho Resources for about almost $10 billion in stock, and this is going to be the largest shale industry deal since the collapse in energy demand that happened earlier this year, and one that would create a heavyweight driller in America's most prolific oil field. Investors will get about 1.5 shares for each Concho share. The transaction represents a 15% premium over Concho's closing price on October 13th, Dave. So, you know, they're supposed to be one of the dominant operators. The combination will be the dominant operators in the Permian Basin. But, you know, whenever you see companies merge like this or buy out, employees go bye-bye.
Yeah, just another sign of the times, I'm afraid. I hate this this level of M&A. It's going to rival the likes of Occidental and Chevron, at least in terms of crude output. And this deal may also signal further M&As in the sector in the months to come, especially with oil stuck way below it was a while ago. Houston-based Conoco emerged from the oil market slump in a relatively strong position with about $7 billion of cash on hand. So much so, it recently resumed share buybacks. But its growth outlook is challenged. Second quarter production was down by almost one quarter from a year ago after it joined a number of other U.S. drillers in curbing output in response to lower prices. So, another year, another downturn in competition, Melody.
Well, let's go ahead. You know, today China came out. This is if you believe everything that comes out of China. I mean, we have a hard time believing everything that comes out of our government, so I don't know if you would believe China. They said today that their GDP expanded by, 4.9% in the third quarter from a year earlier. So this would put China's economy back toward its pre-pandemic trajectory. As positive development they say it is, the 4.9% expansion missed by 10% economists' forecasts for 5.5% expansion. So China revived its economy in roughly three stages, first by shutting down most economic activity. In April, authorities got factories revved up, allowing exports to increase. The third quarter, when the virus was almost stamped out, authorities began encouraging consumers to venture out and open their wallets. But you got to remember, all of China was not shut down. It was only the Wuhan region of about 60 million people. So I'm not sure how that affected the rest of the country, Dave. So I would think that numbers would be skewed just a little bit somehow. But drilling into that data, the number shows that a surge in imports has acted as a counterweight against bumper exports. That's partly because inbound shipments surged 3.2% in September from a year ago. 13.2% in September from a year ago, depressing the net contribution of trade to the calculation of their GDP. So, net exports contributed only 0.6% percentage points to GDP's expansion in the third quarter. So that dynamic may not fade in the near term, given that China's consumers are showing firm signs of resurgence. Retail sales expanded 3.3% in September from a year earlier, though. I don't know, Dave. It's, you know, see all these percentages, all these numbers, and
well,
they all mean?
I think your question mark is your skepticism of the credibility of the numbers is healthy. We don't. I mean, it's true to some extent in this country, although we had the general public has a tad more access to some of the underlying assumptions and methods that government agencies and others, particularly the government agencies, use in determining some of our official numbers. A lot more of a leap of faith when it comes to countries like China. Russia's probably even less trustworthy. At least in China, there's some level of competition within the Politburo that has got to keep Xi Jinping and as well as his predecessors and future successors on their toes. And I would expect that there's some pressure within their bureaucracies to have some level of accuracy. The only question is how much of that's actually reported publicly, as opposed to another set of books that might just be distributed within to the powers that be. But that's certainly not to suggest any kind of conspiracy. It's their way of government, their way of operation. So I don't know what else to say about these third quarter numbers other than to say we now turn our attention to the U.S., where we're expecting substantially more growth, although on an annualized basis we'll see if it gets to the 5% level.
Highly unlikely, but that would be a great thing if it did, but highly unlikely. One thing I want to talk about is I saw a headline while we were doing the program, and I couldn't find it after I scrolled by. About 6 million plus people are in the rears on their mortgage payments. That's a lot. It's a lot of people. And, you know, we talk about the stimulus. And, you know, we do continue to see these households. I mean, they're in dire financial stress. And you have, I'm pretty sure it was 6 million Americans have missed their rent or mortgage payments again last month. Millions have missed their student loan payments. Millions are falling into poverty. And Americans are just simply running out of money. One survey found that 40% of all households have used up all or most of their savings. We talked about this, where most people, their money is only going to last through the election. 74% of families with children that make less than $100,000 a year have experienced serious financial problems. We have food insecurity has become a pervasive problem. The percentage of families with children who reported not having enough to eat more than tripled in July compared with 2019. One report found that nearly half of American families lived with hunger during the summer. Even if you take these numbers and cut them in half, there's still amazing numbers. I mean, if nearly half of U.S. families are living with hunger now, how bad are things going to get? And we haven't seen these numbers coming out from closing our economy this year. How can a 70% consumer economy be sustained when you have those 70% of consumers broke, Dave?
Well, you had me on the edge of my seat so much, Melody, that I was hearing a voice inside of me saying, breathe, breathe. That's startling to the point of being astounding. And there's more, too. I mean, since the pandemic started, more than 64 million Americans have filed new claims for unemployment. And we know every single one of them has some kind of unique story or another. Some of them had some level of savings, but when you're out of work month after month after month, those savings tend to disappear very quickly. And now, as the holiday season approaches, a lot of people completely out of money. I work
all night, I work Merry all Christmas. Day. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you will too. And until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's too bad.